Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I am your host, free of coronavirus at the moment, Ian Stephen. And joining me today on the CSI Podcast is a member of the first family of Scottish football, a former Scottish internationalist. Sorry, international, with spells at Rangers, Hearts, under his belt before becoming a manager, pundit, and the father of the hottest commodity in Scottish football, maybe apart from last night, as we might talk about, is, of course, Derek Ferguson. Hello, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, and I'm free of corona. I've not had a beer as of yet today. You're glad. We're here, what is it, 11 o'clock in the morning?
That's fine. If you're flying, you can have it at 6 in the morning.
Nah, I'm only kidding on. But it's a serious subject, that, isn't it? I'm quite worried about that virus, you know, in terms of a lot of these international games coming up. And talking about the Euros maybe being under threat. So, listen, touch wood, it's not going to be as serious as what they think.
I know. I've got tickets for the Israel game. Sod's Law, Scotland qualify for the first finals in years and nobody can watch it because it's all behind closed doors.
It's incredible, isn't it? And I just don't get that. How players, you know, would react to that behind closed doors. Must be so difficult. I've never had that in my career. Played in front of small crowds, 300-400 at the tail end of my career, but it must be so weird. And again, sometimes you need that. You need the crowd. You need to get that for your motivation. You get a wee kick up the backside at times, but I hope that. Is that going to be the case? Is that a sure thing?
I cover a lot of the news, and it looks like it seems to be a kind of over dramatisation of what is in effect. There's not been many people that have died for it. It's just a flu that affects respiratory condition. There's probably more people that die of falling off ladders every single day than do coronavirus, but
they've got to have their procedures in place. I get that, but so fingers crossed.
Well, yes. Now I have to apologise to you because on the last podcast I said that Stevie Cowan might be the nicest man in Scottish football, but it might actually be you.
Ach, hell. Don't give me that. You grow up,
right? You're not a Rangers fan or a Celtic fan or whatever, and you see a player that plays for one of the old firm and you think, oh, I don't like him. But then...
Do you know something, Ian? I go into the schools and I do a bit of work with show racism and red card, and we talk about stereotypes, and it's again how people judge you, you know, from afar. Sometimes they see you on the TV, they maybe read articles about you, and for whatever reason, they make your mind up about you. And we talk about that. I obviously come from the football side of it, talking about people like Scott Brown, who's came to events that we've held, guys like my brother, Barry Ferguson as well. There's guys like Neil Lennon, all these football players, managers at the top level. There's this perception that they're pretty aloof, pretty arrogant, but most of the time, in my experience, they're not like that whatsoever. It's what you're seeing is when they're basically working, when they're at their workplace. So they're a different animal in that respect. Take them away for that scenario, maybe like, just me and your good self, just sitting having a chat, or maybe having a cup of coffee, or going for a beer or two. These guys are just normal people, and just I think it would kind of open a lot of people's eyes.
I think one of the problems is if somebody approaches you unannounced, you've always got that wariness in the back of their mind of, are they a rival fan? Are they about to? Because it's happened. Leo Lennon's been attacked when he's been out. Yeah, you've got to have that.
I was actually at that game. I was working with the BBC at the time, and it was actually scary because at that moment, didn't know if the guy had a weapon in his hand. So, I mean, that should never happen at a football game. The guy's there. Neil Lennon's there. They do a job, and he should be safe, you know, in that environment. But unfortunately, that's not been the case, which is a real shame. But my experiences as a player, and even a short period of time as a manager, now as a pundit, I get quite a good reception. Even as a player, as a young guy when I was at Rangers, when I was maybe having a wee cheeky night out, as you do, as I certainly did back then, I seemed to be going pretty well with a lot of the Celtic fans. Of course there's a rivalry there, and but it was a bit of banter, and I think that's important, that you can still have that, a laugh and a joke. I think those days might have left, because I think in this day and age, professional football players, they're different in terms of they're maybe not out and about as much as we were. So we were maybe kind of in certain places where you could get in tow with the normal fan, if you want to call it that.
Well, you would never do anything as daft as sit in the away end of an Aberdeen game though, would you?
Well, Matt, do you know something? It's years going past, and I don't pay to get in, right? And it's terrible. I mean, you hear Tam Cowan shouting about that, but you get your complimentary tickets. Days can pass, complimentary tickets where that you were in the main stand. Complimentary tickets in this day and age, like for family, friends, you sit with the fans. You're in the way end, so you've not got a choice. So, which can be a wee bit difficult, because you're in amongst a core of supporters who are obviously there, and fine voice there to support their team, and you're in the midst of that. Sometimes it can be quite easy to get caught up in the atmosphere, you know, and this is something that I go into the schools and warn the kids that you've got to be careful, but it's a passionate game, things are said, and at times you hear a lot of stuff that's going on, and it's hard being a dad and your son's out playing.
Aye.
I've been there as a brother, watching my brother playing, and listen to some of the stuff that's shouted at them. It can be a hard watch.
Imagine if your brother and your son weren't any good, it would be even tougher.
Oh. I've never even thought like that.
Did the fans recognise you when you were there?
Well, do you know, I think I'm like kind of incognito in terms of that. I go with a disguise on, I've got the big jacket on, as you know, I'll get the hoodie, I'll have the hat, but sometimes people do recognise you. I think they realise that there is going to be family members there, so they're maybe having a wee look across to see if you're there. But that's maybe a problem I have. I love going to games, as you know, it's part of my job now, but I'm passionate about it. I just love watching football, and sometimes I get caught up in it. And sometimes it's been a thing that maybe we work with the BBC and open all mics. I get a wee bit overexcited at times, but listen, I'm not going to make any apologies about that.
I think fans don't mind about that. I think that's the whole point about football. If a goal scored, it's exciting. Especially if somebody scores with the outside of their boot top corner against St Mirren in the Cup. Apologies to any St Mirren fans listening, but has your soul re-entered your body after celebrating that goal?
Do you know, I couldn't make that game that night. I was actually in the house watching it. I just got in. I was at the Dunfermline game. It's a good finish. I think with Lewis, he has got that in his locker, but he can play all different kind of positions in terms of he can be the sitting midfielder, he can be the attacking midfielder. But I don't think if people have noticed, sometimes Derek McInnes employs him in terms of to kind of nullify other teams' threats. Sometimes he sits on maybe a playmaker, so he can man mark. He does all sorts of jobs. But the most important thing for me is people maybe kind of have maybe says, oh, he's maybe not scored enough goals this season. But there's reasons for that, because he's maybe been played in a kind of a position a little bit deeper, and that's for the benefit of the team. So at the end of the day, It's not about the individual. It's nice that Lewis has scored a fantastic goal, and it was a cracker, so it was. But at the end of the day, it's about getting a result for Aberdeen Football Club. He knows that, and it's about the team, and I think that's what Lewis is all about.
Can I give you a player comparison?
Yes.
See, tell me what you think. You're the expert. David Platt.
Do you know something who he liked growing up? Now, David Platt was a box-to-box.
Box-to-box, but also scored incredibly important goals as well at the right time.
One of Lewis's kind of idols or heroes, whatever you want to call it, Frank Lampard.
Really?
Same type of player.
Yep.
So, Lewis has got that engine. He loves that type of role. And that is that. Maybe Frank Lampard, and you're saying like David Platt. And if he was allowed to have a little bit more freedom in terms of hitting the box, well, maybe he would add to his goal tally. But what I'm saying is, first and foremost, it's about the team. And if there's anything else that comes for it in terms of goals, that's a bonus.
One of the main things that never really gets mentioned in football, people talk about pace and heading ability, that kind of stuff. They don't talk about mentality because you can't notice it. Mm-hmm. It's part of somebody's makeup in the game, and he's clearly a very dominant personality in the pitch. He demands the ball. You can see him demanding others play their position. The same as Billy Gilmour last night, we're just chatting about it. One of the things that impressed me was he was young, but he demands the ball, and it's good to see, because these are the players that Scotland need to go on to a big stage. And playing at Hampden, playing against England at Wembley, playing in a major tournament, which fingers crossed we get to do at some point, you need to have that psychological ability as well.
That is, some people have got it, some people haven't. It's like an inner confidence. You've just got a belief in your ability, and it's that you can handle everything else that's going on around about you. Criticism is a big part of the game, being able to handle that. And I think, like you're saying, like Billy, you know, Billy, quite rightly so, has had a lot of plaudits. He's a terrific player, and he's probably had to bide his time because of the quality there. It's there at Chelsea. But he's got that inner belief. He believes he's as good as any other Chelsea first team player at the moment. And that's a brilliant thing to have. Sometimes it can come with youth as well. You know, there's no fear. And I think Lewis has certainly got that. I think I had that as a young man. I played with no fear. I was never intimidated with big name players. The same goes for my brother, Barry.
Do you know the only other player that I saw demanding the ball like your brother when he played? Jim Bett.
Oh, Jim Bett. See, Jazza Bett was one of my, again, you look at players, I mean, I love the David Coopers, you know, absolute hero of mine. Bobby Russell and Jazza Bett, Jim Bett was phenomenal. And again, you're talking about types of players, David Platt, Frank Lampard. Jim Bett, you know, was had a great engine on him, a box-to-box. Could run with the ball, yep, a little bit more, but no, I think that's a great example. So as maybe you look at players as you growing up, and you try to take wee bits of them, but it's having that belief in your ability, and having that, you don't fear anybody.
That was the opposite of me when I played, because I was a goalkeeper, so I didn't want the ball, and I would shout, "Get the ball away!" Complete opposite.
I hear players like kind of saying in this day and age that they're scared of kind of making a mistake. Well, if you feel like that, you're going to struggle, because I played with some players that maybe weren't the best in terms of their technique, their skill, but what I loved about them, they never shied away from anything. They would always show it. And I think that that's a mentality, that's an inner belief that you can handle certain situations. And we're talking about Gilmour, we're talking about Lewis, and you mentioned guys like Jim Bett and that, and there's Lampard. I think these guys, they've all got that in abundance.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to the meat and bones, or the vegetables if you're vegan. We're here to discuss a certain season. It's quite pivotal in Scottish football.
Hope I can remember.
I hope so as well, but we'll delve into the kind of start of your career. I think you've talked in the past, you were born in July 67. You talked in the past that you moved around a fair bit when you were younger, is that correct?
No, well, I grew up in Glasgow. Stayed in Shettleston, then it was Gathamlet, Ballanark, that area. So, and I moved out to Hamilton when I was about, 12 years old. So there was a kind of an overspill from Glasgow, where there was kind of schemes in Hamilton that a lot of Glasgow people moved to. So we moved out here to Hamilton. And I love Hamilton. I call Hamilton God's country. I know you're laughing, right?
I just
like Hamilton. I just like where it's got on its doorstep, Strathclyde Park. I've always had a soft spot. Although I'm a Rangers fan, as you know, I've got a soft spot for the Accies, because when I moved to Hamilton, me and a few of my pals, when we were at Airnock High, we used to take the short journey down to Douglas Park to watch the Accies evening midweek games, and not so much Saturday, because I was always playing Saturday morning, afternoon, then Sunday morning, afternoon. So I've got a wee soft spot for Hamilton and the Accies.
You took your training too seriously, didn't you? You ended up missing a lot of school to.
Yeah, do you know something? And I look back, this is a funny one, because in this day, I get a wee bit angry that my mum and my dad, Archie and Maureen, it was their anniversary yesterday, so it was, that they allowed that to happen. Because basically, from about second year onwards, I struggled at school. I didn't enjoy school. The only two subjects I liked was, surprise, surprise, PE and English. The rest of it, I just had no interest. And what I used to do was I used to skip school and go up. There's a, up the back of Little Airnock, there's a nature trail, and there's got some brilliant areas, lovely surface, like grass. Now, I used to go and train. I used to go and train in the afternoon. If I didn't like a certain subject at school, I would go get my kit on and go and train and go and just practice with the ball, keep you up, do wee runs, just practice stuff that I was maybe getting in at Rangers at that time, because my coaches were like John Gregg, Tam Forsyth, Alec Miller, Tommy McLean. So there was wee bits and bobs in their drills that I would replicate. They didn't know that I was doing that. I would get into absolute. If Rangers knew that,
yeah,
I'd probably get bombed out.
That was a heck of a coaching staff you just listed there as well.
It's incredible, yeah, isn't it? And to think those guys who were playing at that time as well and involved heavily in football, that they took in their spare time came to train us. It was maybe once or twice a week. Could you see that happening in this day and age? Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm talking out of turn here. Could you see maybe a Scott Arfield, a Steve Davis, going up to the Hummel Centre and taking training sessions? I don't think that maybe kind of happens in this day and age, but that's the way it was back then.
One thing that was really interesting was you said you were doing that effectively on your own. I think Strachan said when he was younger, he used to go out just doing running on his own because he wanted to train and improve his own stamina. The famous story from Man United is Cantona would go out in the afternoon and some of the younger players would notice him and come out and do what he was doing and train that little bit extra. Maybe there's that inner desire in some players that they want to get better, and that's why they do.
Ian, I wanted it badly. I put all my eggs in the one basket in terms of not going to school, not getting my qualifications, that I just wanted to be a player. I wanted it that bad. But I was fortunate. I had a certain amount of ability that allowed me to become a professional football player, but people don't probably know that about me, or that other side of it, that I had a huge desire. It's all I ever wanted to do was to be a player. But at that time, all I wanted to be was a Rangers player. That was my goal. That was it.
So how did you get to join Rangers when Accies are right on your doorstep? How did you get noticed?
Well, it was Accies never even at that time. I don't think they were even had a kind of a youth policy in terms of signing S form. I was actually going up to Dundee United at that time. I had been down at Manchester United as a young man, 12, 13.
So you got spotted playing, was it schools you got spotted?
I was school football, and I played with a team called Burnbank, up just down for Hamilton, as you know. And that's where you kind of get noticed.
My mate's just got incredibly excited because he lives in Burnbank.
And, So Burnbank, we won the Scottish Cup. Under 13s, so we did. We played, what was it, the final? It was down at Killy, Kilmarnock's ground. So Burnbank were a good, there's a lot of good players for this area, for the Hamilton area. So after Burnbank, I moved on to Gart Cosh. But at that time, I was training Dundee United, I was at Manchester United, I was in for a short spell at Celtic as well before Rangers come in and invited me into training. And once that I'd got to Rangers, it was a no-brainer. I mean, I, at that time, if they were going to offer me a contract, an S form, which was a four-year contract, it took you from about 12 and a half up to 16, yep. There was only going to be one winner, because that's all I wanted. I just wanted to be try and become a Rangers player. So,
and did they come in at 16 with a full professional contract?
I kind of knew that I was going to get a contract when I was about 15 and a half. Now, it's usually about around about 16 they make that decision. And the reason, hence, I'm going to say that I thought I might get, I was quietly confident I was going to get a contract, was because I had played in Tamforsyth's testimonial, mm-hmm. at 15 and a half. I played the last 20 minutes. Let's get it right. I didn't start the game. But initially I thought I was going in to watch the game, to help out with the kit, to get all the guys their cups of tea, whatever they needed, their paper, whatever. And then the next thing, it was John Gregg, who was phenomenal with me. He says, listen, put some kit on, there's some kit for you. Go out and warm up and join in at maybe half time as well. A wee kick at the ball out in front of the fans. And I was like, I can't believe this. So, and again, there'd be a few of my pals from Airlock High that would may have been sitting in the stands. But there I was, out, half time, striking the ball about in Ibrox, a hallowed turf, which was huge for me. So, boys run out for the second half, and it was about 25 minutes ago. John Gregg says, go and warm up, I'm putting you on. I could not believe it. And I looked at and looked across, and there was big Tamforsyth. You know, I think he was puffing away in a fag, a cigarette. And I was like, and he just winked at me. He's like, get yourself on there, wee man. And that's how I got the last 20 minutes, which was absolutely amazing.
So when did you make your full senior debut?
It's funny because, the game that I remember that sticks in my mind was at Ibrox against Hearts in a League Cup game, and I played wide and right. But it was actually when I've looked back, and I do remember now, it was at Queen of the South. I played down there at the age of 16. But the one that I can...
you made your professional debut as a 16-year-old?
16, yep. So I'm still the youngest player to ever play with Rangers.
Really?
I thought that would have, that record would have been broken by now. But so
I think John Fleck was, mm-hmm. pretty young, was he not?
Yep, there's been a few at six, but as far as I'm aware, I might need to check that, but as far as I'm aware, I'm still the youngest player to ever play with Rangers, which is a nice feeling grand old age of 52, nearly going on to 53.
So the season we want to talk about, which was 86, 87, what age would you have been about 86 then?
Was that 18, 19? I don't go into mathematics, you know, I never went to school.
So the reason why we're talking about this season, because it's the first season that a certain Mr. Graham Souness appeared at the club.
Amazing.
It was April when it was announced he was going to be the manager. He was replacing Jock Wallace. What was your memories of Jock?
I love Big Jock. Jock was amazing. He's got this persona that he was, and he was tough, you know, in terms of, he was tough because being a Rangers player, there was an expectation and how you conducted yourself when you went onto that park, what was expected of you. It made you, it got it through to you that when you were playing for Rangers, you were representing the fans. We were lucky to have that jersey. And he used to say, is like, because you think of all the thousands and thousands of Rangers fans, they would kill for that. So you're the lucky ones. So, and I knew that, I didn't need to be told that. But the other side of Jock was, there was a softer side where he would take you aside and just ask you, you know, how things were at home. How's your mum and dad, and how are you? How are you? So there was a softer side to him, but you never seen that in front of a camera or a microphone. He always had time for you. He always had a laugh. He liked I'm saying he liked this, but I didn't quite like it. He liked it. He used to say, we'll have a punch for a punch. And he loved that. And have you seen the size of his hands? I mean, they were huge. And have you took one? And it wasn't a punch, it was a jab that he would give you. But that jab would knock you about 10 foot back. And we were allowed to give him one. And he just stood there, rock solid, never moved. But no, I love Joe. And I always remember before we went out the tunnel, he always used to give you a wee kind of friendly pat in the back of the head. Well, I think I played with concussion a few times because a wee slap for Jock Wallace was a bit of a thud, but no, he was great. And he played me in a few different positions. He played me as sweeper in one of the games, but he put a lot of faith into like some myself, Ian Durant. There was Dave McFarlane, there was Robert Fleck, there was Shuggy Burns. I might be missing a few others. Apologise if I do, but because they'd spent a lot of money in the stadium, they went and looked at the youth side and Jock. So Jock, I don't think he gets enough plaudits for that, because, you know, at that time, try to win games for Rangers Football Club, which is paramount, but also playing with us young guys, because we were all around about that age, like 17, 18, 19. So, no, I've just got great memories.
When did you make your Old Firm debut then?
I was 17. And that was Jock. So it was Celtic Park. Do you know something? See, that it finished one each. I know that for a fact. And I remember my opponent, who I was up against, was Tommy Burns. And growing up a Rangers supporter, been in amongst a lot of my pals, obviously, all Rangers supporters, and you hear a lot of stuff that... or this dislike, or this hatred for one another. It can be for some of the fans, not all of them, but I thought it was going to be like that with the players. Far from it, because it kind of really took me aback. I was about 5-10 minutes into the game, and I started reasonably well, keeping possession of the ball, and this Celtic idol, fantastic player Tommy Burns, kept praising me. I'm going, what's going on here? He's at the wind up. But no, he kept praising me, saying, well done, wee man, keep it going. One and two touch, don't get caught in the ball, it's 100 mile out here. And the atmosphere, and it was electric, and the quality of the football was amazing, but it was the pace. But he kept praising me, he kept, well done, give me a wee pat here and there, a wee word of encouragement. I'm kind of scratching my head and I'm going, like, this is not the way it was supposed to be. I think I was about 70 odd minutes or, and I got took off. I was cream crackered, I was knackered. So I'm sitting on the bench and I'm watching the rest of the game being played out. And I'm like, I'm going, that's not what I thought. That's not what I imagined. I thought there would be all this kind of hatred and verbals between the players. Nah. Nothing like that. Remember going inside and we kind of went into a players' lounge at Celtic Park, and all the players are coming in, and I'm sitting there, and some of them are having a beer. I couldn't have a beer. I was only 17. Plus, Jock would have been right through me anyway. So, but I'm watching all the players coming in, having a yap with each other, chatting away to each other, and I was like that. I thought it would be kind of Celtic one side, Rangers the other, but no, they're all in conversation, having a laugh, having a joke. I'm like, ah, wow. And it's when I went outside, and I always remember us. My dad was there as normal, as usual, to pick me up. My dad was like, how was that? And I says, Dad, it was amazing. I says, the quality, the pace of the game. And I remember saying to him, but Dad, I see Tommy Burns. Right away, my dad was like, what about Tommy Burns? What did he say? What was he saying to you? And I went, no, I said, Dad, Tommy was brilliant. I says, he was actually praised me, encouraged me during the game. He's like, are you at the wind up? I says, no, I'm kidding you not. I says, that happened. I says, he was kind of dead complimentary. It was weird. And he was like, so my dad's obviously a big Ranger supporter as well. And sometimes we get back to what we said at the start. People have this perception of people, what they're going to be like. My dad probably had certain thoughts on Tommy Burns, but because of my experience and what I told him, that probably changed. So, it's incredible, it's unbelievable. And guys, again, that day, I think it was McStay was playing, he was a phenomenal player, Peter Grant. Grant, he was a better player than people gave him credit for as well. you know, Peter the Pointer, as I always used to say, but Peter could play a bit as well.
Aye. how is it different in the week leading up to an Old Firm game as a player?
Oh, it's everything, because you know what it means to the fans. You know that it's
do you get more fans stopping you?
Aye, of course you do. Aye, absolutely. And you need to win this game, wee man. We need this badly. And you get it right away that it's not just a game for them. It's not just a Rangers Celtic game. It's their lives. It feels as if their life depends on it, because it is a big part of their life. Football, I mean, being a huge part of mine. And it's just getting that feeling, and that's what I think Jock tried to install into us. You're playing for them. It's for them. That's why you're out there. Aye, the money's nice, and you've got a decent lifestyle in terms of you stay in some nice hotels, but that's what Jock always tried to get across to us. It's about the punters. It's about the guys that are paid their money. They've worked all week, and they're paid a lot of money to come and see you. You give them everything. And look at me, I'm pointing, I'm slamming the table here. But, you know, so that was that was installed into me as a young guy at 13, 14, 15, with Greggy, with Forsyth, with McLean, with Miller. That was, but it was done in a different manner. It was, you know, they just spoke to you, they coached you, you know, and you knew representing Rangers was different, because we were all shirt and tie. I don't know if you've ever noticed, Ian. I mean, we only bump into each other most of the time at football, but I never wear a shirt and tie now. It's because I wore it from I was 12 years old up to I was until Graham came, Graham Souness. That's representing Rangers, so we had to have shirt and tie, clean shaven, and when I had hair, it had to be neat and tidy, because when Jock walked into the dressing room, I had, believe it or not, longish hair, and it was dyed blonde.
Really?
And he just stared at me and he says, "You young man, there's a wee barber's round the road, round at Copeland Road, get round there and get that cut." And I did, done what I was told. I wasn't going to mess with Jock Wallace.
So, did the butterflies start earlier for an Old Firm game? Did they start earlier in the week?
You think about it, you kind of get it out of your mind. What I used to do was kind of visualise what I wanted to do in the game. I used to think about it, and think about it, and think about it. And then sometimes during the game, you were in a certain area of the park, I knew what I was going to do. I'd already played it out in my mind. I remember Roy Aitken, who was a tough opponent, and there was one of the games. And this is a bit mad to say, but I'd discussed it with a family member that I was going to kind of put the ball over Roy Aitken's head, not once but twice, and I kept playing it out in my mind, and it happened in one of the games, because the ball just bounced perfectly where I could just help it over his head, and as he turned to get after me, and I knew Roy Aitken, there's only one place I was going, probably 6 foot in the air, and I put it back over his head and then popped it away. But I think just as I popped it away, I get a good thud, but it's like that. I'd already played it out in my mind. But there's other wee scenarios you play. It's like kind of, I've said to Lewis, it's about visualisation, just knowing. So when it happens, you're in an area of the park, you already know what you're going to do. Mm. Boom, it's away. So I know it's a bit, but we're all different. But I was. That's what your question is. Do you think about it? You can't stop thinking about it. But that's a wee bit more intense, obviously, than some of the other games.
Well, here's a good question for you. I mean, you played football a while ago. I don't want to remind you too much of that, but there's maybe people who are younger that never had a chance to see you play. So who would you say you would compare your style to? I've already compared your son to David Platt. Who would you say your playing style replicates, somebody maybe more closer to the modern age?
On this day and age, who would I... Oh, that's a hard one, because I've never really thought it. I mean, I was more of a sitting midfield player. I was more of a kind of a playmaker in terms of trying to get players in that final third on the ball, you know, a wee kind of killer pass. Because they're quite different. They play different formations, just like kind of the, you've got two screeners that are playing in front of a back four. Sometimes maybe they're not the best, maybe that's a terrible saying that, the best technically, but they do a certain job and they keep it simple. And then you've got, you know, the three in front of them that are the guys with a little bit of imagination. I think I had a wee bit of both. A player that I admired that came to the club that I absolutely loved was Ray Wilkins. So I was kind of wanting to be a wee bit like Ray. Ray was a wee bit more kind of safer in terms of possession of the ball. I would at times like to play a kind of a wee kind of killer pass and get forward at times. But
listen, in terms of nice people in football, Ray Wilkins may have taken the crown. Some of the stories that after him, the sad news about him recently.
Gutted, absolutely gutted, because when Ray came to the club and the career that Ray had, you know, top England captain.
AC Milan.
Huge clubs. If you look at all the clubs that he did play for, Man United as
Chelsea
well.
Chelsea as well.
I mean, at Chelsea, you're talking about Billy Gilmour, you know, I think. Ray Wilkins played at a young age and captain at a young age. But again, when he came to the club, I thought he was going to be... He was totally different from what I expected. I thought, again, he might be, because of what he's done in his career, might be quite arrogant, quite aloof, no time for us. Exact opposite. He was an absolute gentleman. He spent time, not just with me, but all the other kind of youngish players, to pass on a bit of advice. He had time out in the training park. But for me, the thing I loved about Ray Wilkins, he liked a giggle. He loved a wee laugh and a joke. And I think he loved that being in amongst some of us, the younger guys. I think that kept him going as well. I'll tell you a cheeky wee story, because we were over in Dubai playing the British Cup final after the game. We won the game in penalties against Everton, and we were back at the hotel, and Graham Souness had said to us that we're leaving early tomorrow morning. It's about 8, 9, 8, about half 8, we're getting picked up the bus. He says, you can go have a couple of drinks, a few drinks, don't overdo it, be on the bus early doors next morning. So me and Ian Durant, my wee mucker, my pal, we were sitting at the bar, and just and it was quiet, and it's in Dubai, it's a way back there, so there wasn't a lot going on, so we were just having a couple of quiet beers. But there was Ray Wilkins and Trevor Francis just sitting across from us, and a wee table and chairs, and just their feet up. Just, it was kind of a kind of wee luxurious part of the hotel. But he shouted us over, and he'd said to us, Ray was like, you shouldn't be drinking that stuff. He says, that's no good for you, too much of that beer and that. He says, listen, sit down here, and listen, I'm going to pour you a nice wee glass of wine. Right, so I'm and Trevor were drinking this, whatever it was, expensive wine. So he poured me and Ian a kind of a glass, and then he'd said to us, you know, you don't just drink it like you drink beer. Obviously, you have a wee smell and a wee taste it, but me and Ian, young boys, made a wee wink at each other. We just downed it in a winner, and you ought to see his face. He was like, no. He was going, no. So we had to order another bottle quite quick, because we had a right good night, but we had a great laugh with Ray. Trevor, I don't know. Trevor found it hard a wee bit. I don't think he was as kind of patient with us, with the young, because you're a wee bit happy daft when you're at his. But I think Ray enjoyed that. But next morning, I'd got up. But I couldn't get Ian out of his bed. It was a bit of a struggle. And what happened was, I tapped Ray's door, and he came along, and he packed Ian's bag. He got Ian up, he squared them up, and made sure, me myself, and got the two of us onto that bus. So tell me another guy, other players, they just left us and says, they'll get fine. He got up himself and come in and got us sorted and made sure we were on the bus. He's a brilliant guy.
One of the things I always remember about Trevor Francis, when he scored that winning goal in the European Cup final, he kept going, and he ended up landing on the bit of concrete for the shot put, and I always think that's got to be the most painful, fantastic goal somebody could ever score. So,
He was a soft touch, Trevor, I'll tell you, because sometimes Trevor wouldn't train in the wind. If it was too windy, he would say to his, oh, no. And when I was in Italy, we didn't train, we didn't do runs in this type of weather, it was too windy. Well, hard lines. It's Scotland you're in. It does get a bit windy from time to time. So I think we just want to be kind of go off of the running that we were doing.
Can you imagine if Rangers had a cup tie up in Arbroath?
But he wasn't as patient as, but it was some player, Trevor Francis. So he was.
Well, at the start of last season, UK number one at the time, Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh.
Right.
Bit better with the UK number one film in August. It was Aliens, the sequel. All
right.
Which is a good film. Now, at this point, Rangers had moved with David Holmes taking over as chairman. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Marlborough was the kind of shareholder in the background, but David Holmes was the kind of front man. What was your memories of David Holmes?
Gentleman. Sometimes chairman at clubs. You don't see them that often, but I think David Holmes tried to get involved at times. Not involved in the football, just like, you know, in the foyer, you know, but he always had time for you. Sometimes it's with chairman or directors, it's just a hello, cheerio. But with David, it was no, he'd always have a wee bit of time for you. And that's why, again, with David, you've got good memories of him, because in this day and age, it's nice to just, even 2 minutes, somebody again to ask, how's things going? Are you enjoying it? And you're looking forward to this and that. So David was that type of guy. He always had a bit of time for you.
Well, he was quite aggressive in what he wanted Rangers to do, because there was a period of time Rangers weren't as successful as they became.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as came in, or was appointed in 86,
yep.
As legend has it, sat around the pool in Italy with Walter Smith and started game planning about who they were going to bring in. So I suppose the first question to ask was, how did you first meet Souness?
Oh, he came out of the dressing room. We were told to be in the dressing room. The gaffer was coming, Graham Souness, and obviously we knew the stories in the paper, but I always remember him just coming into that dressing room. My God, there he was, standing in front of you, this icon. Superstar, and he was not just going to be our manager, he's going to be our player manager. So I was like, a lot of the guys in the dressing room, I was excited, same as Durante, same as Scott Nisbet, Flecky, Shoggy Burns, we were all like that, you know.
It's interesting you were naming the younger players or no naming the older players, because might have thought of their jacket was in a shuggly peg.
Well, and that's it, because Graham was going to change things. And there was going to be a lot of, obviously, comings and goings, and that was part of, when they call it a speech, when you just say addresses, he said that, he said there is going to be changes. Some of yous will like it, some of yous won't like it. It's part and parcel of football, and I think that's where the kind of the guys that were there at the time, even guys like David Cooper, Bobby Russell, there was Craig Parson, there was a lot of the guys that were maybe kind of on the wrong side of 30. So he was a winning machine, Souness, and that's all that interested him. And so if it was going to be his way or no way. So and we got that right away.
Was he calm when he came in?
Oh,
was he
cool as
honestly,
he was cool as a cucumber, honestly. She's a walk past, he even smelled brilliant in the dress.
Really?
A waft expensive aftershave. It was like that. It wasn't your Brute or your Old Spice. This was expensive stuff. And he just, I remember him standing there and just looking at me. He looked immaculate. It's just that, I don't know, it was a beautiful Italian suit. The old tash, that permed hair, kind of glistening, the tan, the jewellery. Everything, he just looked amazing. And there was Walter beside him, but business-like.
Yeah.
It was like, you could see it. So it was like, looking at Walter, and I'm not belittling Walter Smith for 1 minute. I wouldn't do that, because he wouldn't mess with Walter Smith. But it was just to see this absolute, kind of, world-class football player going to be your manager, player manager. And he just looked the part. And I think that was part of Graham Souness. He always looked dressed well. Yeah. He always looks smart. He looks after his appearance, and it just looked unbelievable. And you're just sitting there. So are you in awe of somebody like that? Are you going, wow? Of course you are, because you're going, oof, this.
Did they swap the kind of good cop, bad cop routine, or was always the enforcer?
Yeah, I think that was part of the partnership. Walter was always probably, if there was something to be said, Graham would say it, and then, you know, he would leave the dress room, and Walter, 9 times out of 10, would stay behind. And if there was to be a discussion, shall we say, that broke into arguments at the time, Walter would be in there to kind of handle that situation. Because Walter was, in terms of communication and that, he was top drawer. But he knew, Walter knew the game inside out. And again, do you want to know what it is I'm trying to say? When you looked at the two of them there, they just command respect right away. And unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't happen at times. But when you see, when those two guys were there, look, Souness looked amazing. He's going to still play with us. And then you saw the kind of the business like Walter Smith as well. You know, kind of, and people kind of go, Walter Smith, a kind of hardy guy. A kind of, there was something about Walter, kind of an aura that you just wouldn't mess with him. So, which I think is really key, and it's important, certainly in a football dressing room.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about some of the players that were worried about going, and then we've got a list of some of them here.
Right.
Ian Ferguson.
Right.
Now, there's been a lot of Ian Fergusons. This was the Ian Ferguson. If I just say free kick against Bayern Munich, instantly everybody knows what Ian Ferguson that is. Mm-hmm. What a goal that was. Derek Johnson, Bobby Williamson, Hugh Burns. Mm-hmm. Doogie Bell's.
Oh,
Nicky Walker. I think Nicky went out on loan. Colin Miller.
Right.
Dave McKinnon.
Canadian.
Billy Davis.
I mean, there's some talent there.
Craig Patterson.
Isn't that Big Craigie? I love Big Craig. Craigie was, for a short period, I think, the captain as well. A lot of respect for Craigie. But you think of the quality there. You think maybe, as a manager, you go into a dressing room and you look at that quality and you think, I can get the best out of these guys, I can work with these guys, but Souness wanted to take it to another level. And that's obviously no disrespect to those guys, because they were top players, made a great living out of the game, but I just showed you what was going to happen. The level of player that was going to come to Rangers was going to be top international.
Well, the final player that left, I think he ended up retiring, Peter McCloy.
Oh, big goalkeeper. Girvan Lighthouse. I took a few smacks with Big Peter, because we always used to, me and Geranta used to always challenge the keepers. I know you're looking at me, you're going, I know I stand 5'8" and a half. I'm trying to get that half in, because we used to wind them up all the time. Peter McCloy, Jimmy Stewart, not so much Nicky Walker. Nicky was my pal at that time, good lad. But because they were kind of wee bit older, we just used to wind them up and have a wee rumble with them. But we always come off second best, you know, but I didn't mind that.
Well, the player that replaced Peter McCloy, my goodness, you would struggle to get a better player coming in goals.
Is that good looking guy? Aye. Big Adonis.
My goodness.
So he was, aye. He was top draw. I mean, England, number one at the time as well. Wasn't he? Aye, he was, and again, that was just a kind of an example what Graham was going to do, you know. I think first and foremost, that's what he thought. We're going to get solid. We're not going to concede. And he was going to build from the back, get that base, and to bring in the England number one as your goalkeeper was crazy when you think about it.
Now for people listening that don't understand the kind of politics around what was happening at the time, the English clubs weren't allowed to play in Europe because of the ban at Heysel, and because of Souness's reputation in the game, a former Liverpool stalwart, he'd went to Sampdoria, he had the connections to encourage these players to come up. It wasn't necessarily nowadays with big money behind the moves. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was obviously players would be on decent wages, but
just a bit.
It was the enticement of being able to play in Europe was definitely something that
that was them. Obviously a huge factor, but I think the money wasn't that bad, to be honest with you. Do you know something? Graham come in, and the first thing that he did, I'll speak about myself. I was going to name another player, but that would be unfair. Just myself. I was on £300 a week at that time, which was no bad, which was good, and I was delighted with that. Money wasn't a big factor for me. I just wanted to be a Rangers player. That £300 was a lot of money to me. I was happy as Larry. But right away, he just put me up to £700 a week. Just come in, extended my contract, I think it was a year or two, and I was like, I couldn't believe that. So I loved that. That was brilliant. Graham's, I'm going to be training, hopefully playing with Graham Souness, and he's just more than doubled my wages. I was having the time of my life. I loved the man.
Do you know what Stevie Cowan told me in the last episode? His contract was coming up with Aberdeen, and he went into Fergie, and Fergie said, I'll pay you the same amount. And as Cowan was saying, could I not have a bit more? 2 days later, he phoned him up and went, you're going to Hibs.
Man, it's unbelievable.
Marked contrast in negotiations there.
So there was money coming into the club. I don't, for whatever, but he didn't need it. I was happy with the contract I had. I was happy to be at Rangers. I was going to be working under these guys. There'll be more international players, I assume, that you're going to mention. But I was having the time of my life. And then that was just an added bonus for it more than doubled my wages. So that was magic.
Well, let's test how good you are. Who's the first player that soon signed?
Oh, would that, right, so you say Chris Wood, so it would have, it might have been, there was guys like who's the big centre, Woodsy, there's another one, Woodsy, big centre forward, came from West Brom, Westerwood, Colin West,
yep, he was the first, but well done, first
Colin West, that, yep. Big centre forward,
yep,
basically like a kind of Cosgrove kind of type, big, sturdy, somebody to partner, and Coisty up top. Westy was a great lad, so he was. So in, again, that he obviously wasn't an international player, but Souness, I think, wanted that kind of focal point up top, you know, with Souness. But I'm saying Bowen for the back, but yeah, Colin West. I called him West, that's terrible.
From the back, I mean, Graham Roberts from Spurs. Possibly the best defender in the Europe at the time in Terry Butcher. You could maybe look to,
without a shadow of doubt,
Bressy maybe and Bergamy,
Terry Butcher was see, for, yep, he was big, strong, aggressive. Terry Butcher had a brilliant touch for a centre back. His passing range
his back passing was terrible though.
Was it, have you? Right, well, what I remember, he was what a passer in the ball he was. Because he used to ping what was left, but diagonals. But again, a real motivator. See, if you're looking for somebody, that's where Graham Souness and Walter Smith were cute and clever, because they brought boys in that would run the dressing room, and Terry Butcher was like that. Now, if I wasn't pulling my weight in a game, by God, Butcher would get a grip of you, and it wouldn't be a quiet word in your ear, you know, he would get a grip of you and be demanding things. So I knew that it wasn't so much I was in fearful of the management team, it was like I had to produce, because you didn't want guys like Terry Butcher, you know, breathing down your neck. But they demanded, because they'd high standards, so you had to meet those high standards.
Well, when you're talking about how surprised you could be about meeting a player, they're not what you'd expect. And when I'm growing up, Souness is captain of Rangers, captain of England, so I'm not going to like him. He's captain of two teams that I don't agree with. And then I meet him when he's managing clubs and driving away from one of the clubs, and he's waving at me as I drive past him, like waving bye.
It's not
and
bad,
I'm just like,
it?
He's such a nice man. But I saw the other side of him, because he came in a press conference and somebody had written something in the Herald, and he was shouting, who's the Herald here? And nobody would stand up and admit who it was. And they predicted, I think, that his side would get relegated or whatever, and he wasn't happy. But
I didn't really fear Graham, and I don't know why that is. I loved him as a player, and enjoyed working under him, but it's strange to say that I didn't find him that frightening. I found Walter more kind of something about Walter that what I went, wouldn't you like to cross Walter? Don't know, I didn't find that with Graham for whatever reason. Probably the reason was because Graham used to take me into his office every now and again at times for a wee conversation, a wee chat, a wee cup of tea. And see, when it was just me and Graham, Soonis, he was magic, he was brilliant.
Do you think he saw maybe a bit of himself in you and a kind
but
of
I was told,
a
I was never going. I was never going to be a Graham Soonis. I was never as aggressive as him. I wasn't as good as him. I had kind of different things to my game. I said earlier, a wee kind of flick, a try something, a wee bit imaginative. Graham was an enforcer. Graham ran the show. Maybe he did see something that he could kind of install into me. And I think that might have been partly the reason why he was quite hard on me at times. I know that. But you know, that's part and parcel being a player. The manager is going to be on your back at that time. But I thought maybe he expected me to kind of fill the role that he had done during his career. But I didn't want to be another Graham Souness. I just wanted to be me. I just wanted to play with Rangers, but it could be, I don't know. But those conversations that we had, one-to-ones, I enjoyed them. So I did. I enjoyed sitting listening to, just say, a world-class player talking football. Does they get any better than that?
Well, he brought in Jimmy Nicol as well in defence.
He's one of these players. Forget Jimmy. Oh, again, there's another.
That's a man who's never.
I keep
been
saying
able to
this
leave
word.
Scottish football. Jimmy Nicol's permanently in Scottish football now.
Again, we talk about Jimmy, a great guy, all this, and I laugh a minute. But what a pro! The way Jimmy Nicol trained. Now, Jimmy will not believe this if he was to listen to this. Because he used to say to me at times, you need to work a wee bit harder than this, you need to maybe stretch, but you need to, the training needs to, you need to have more intensity in your training, train the way you play. And if you were to take a step back, and I remember it, I watched Jimmy Nick, every training session, he was full on, 100 mile an hour, brilliant guy, but he was a great example of all the kind of younger guys, and I think that's why he was brought to the club for that, because sometimes you need those guys out in the training field, you know, that you kind of go, God, he's on the wrong side of 30, he might be coming to the end of his career, look at him, he's flying into tackles, he's passing sharp, look how quick he closes down people. Jimmy epitomised all that. Jimmy, the way Jimmy Nick trained was brilliant, but in the other side of him was, he was hilarious away from the park. It was always a battle to try and get at his table when we were going to stay in hotels. Everybody wanted to be at Jimmy Nicol's table just to listen to stories, just to get entertained.
They also brought in Jan Bartram.
Yep.
So he was the only midfielder really that Souness brought in. And I think Gary McSweegan got brought into the squad from the youth set up.
I think when I was at Rangers as well, Swiggy had a nasty injury. He broke his leg.
Really?
It was a reserve game, I remember, against Celtic. Maybe kind of held Swiggy back. But again, Swiggy was like me, a lot of the other guys, just Rangers through and through. Just wanted to play with the club.
So, the players that were making most appearances kind of at that time, Woods, Stuart Munro. Well, the other midfielder, of course, Souness brought in was himself. Can't forget that.
I know. And you think at times who I was competing against. It was Cammy Fraser. Brought Cammy Fraser. Came to the club as well. I think Cammy was there.
I think Cammy was the season before that he came in.
Was he
not
still there when...
he was still there, yeah.
But there was guys like... There was Trevor Stephen was there. You'll get Souness. You'll get Wilkins. Ian Ferguson. Come on. Ian Durant. It's not bad, isn't it?
when Souness first stepped in the training pitch to actually start training with Rangers, were all the players just kind of looking at the corner of the eye, what's he doing, kind of?
Well, do you know, training was it wasn't as intense as I thought it was going to be. We would start off with kind of a game called Toro, just a wee circle, kind of piggy in the middle sort of. We'd have a few strides across the park, then it was mostly kind of just five-a-side, six-a-side, seven-a-side. it wasn't really pre-season was intense, but the training during the week, it was pretty basic. I think it's what he was used to at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And what they relied on was having good players, good pros. So, but this is where I made the mistakes, because done the training, but then was that enough for me at that time? Nope, it wasn't. I should have been back in the afternoon, maybe once or twice a week. But what the other players were doing, the international players, the Gary Stevens, the Trevor Stevens, the Wilkins, the Butchers, they would come back and do their own sessions to keep up their fitness, their sharpness. I was like a few of the other guys, younger guys, I didn't know any better. So I kind of, a wee bit, when I look back, I wish maybe kind of one of the kind of other staff members would have said, right, no, you're not leaving at lunchtime, you're back this afternoon, you're going to do a gym session, you're going to do a technical session. Because that's a regret. That is, people ask you, have you got regrets? And that's one of the regrets, because I did what I was asked. I did my training in the morning, and then you were left to your own devices. I wish that I had the know-how back then, but I didn't, because I was just a young guy. I wish I'd have come back in, done an upper body session, done a technical session, done fast feet, quickness. I never, you know, and that's a real regret.
Yeah. Well, Terry Butcher, again, one of the stalwarts, McCoist, Durant, Ted McMahon managed nearly 20 appearances that season.
A tin man.
So 33 appearances for you that season. It's not too bad.
I remember Graham's first game at Hibs. That was, because you mentioned Ted McMahon, that was a midfield that day. It was Ted McMahon, Graham Souness, Bobby Russell, Ian Durant. I was disappointed I wasn't going to be starting, but then again, who was to take my place? It was Graham. It was Graham Souness. So there was a bit of that I was there and I was going to learn, and by God, I learned that day what Souness was all about, because now you're making the comparisons was maybe like a Graham Souness. Well, Graham Souness set about that whole Hibs team that afternoon, because they tried to target him.
Let's talk about it. He's defensive, right? I'm glad Stevie Cowan's not here.
Stevie was playing that day. Yeah, he was up front with McCluskey.
He tells you a story about it. He's got his own after dinner speaking.
Right.
Basically, his story makes him sound like he's Bruce Lee, taking on five players at once. But it was the 9th of August, 1986. It was the first game of the season.
Uh-huh.
It was at Easter Road. 25,000 fans in attendance.
And there was probably another 10,000 outside.
Yeah.
Easy.
So, I mean, there's excitement about the game. Yep. Rangers, a new era. Rangers fans are excited. Hibs are excited to start the season. Tell us what happened. What happened that game from your mind's eye?
Right, so, obviously, I've said a few of the players that are starting. So, I've took my seat on the bench. And I remember Graham, before we were going out of the dressing room, that he said, listen, we will not be bullied. He knew it was coming. He says, so we retaliate first. We'll show what we're all about. We're Glasgow Rangers. So, I mean, I loved it, to be honest. I shouldn't be saying this. I loved it. I took my seat in the bench. Now, I should be absolutely gutted. No starting. But I sat back and I watched it unfold. And this is my recollection. Maybe Stevie's is a wee bit different. They targeted them as soon as one by one. One by one they fell, because he was scything them down. I think there was who was it, Kirkwood in the middle of the park? Was it Bede? They had the boy Irvin, my wee friend, my good pal Mickey Weir, he was playing. But Mickey was quite sensible, he never went near him. He was too wee anyway, Mickey. But they all had to go. There was Fulton at the back, Chisholm, Tortolano, the one by one they try to noise him up. They try to intimidate him. Imagine trying to intimidate Graham Souness on the football park. He was having none of it, because honestly, he was just, now you've said Kung Fu. he was, so if somebody tried to get close, try to kind of go over the ball, Souness just, he took them out, the game. And it was, I was sitting there applauding. I was clapping my hands. This guy's a machine. This is absolutely brilliant. But then the big fracas when they all, go together. And I initially thought I was like, because I knew it was McCluskey that had kind of tried to straight leg him.
Aye.
And I thought, oh, come on, George, it's not that bad. Come on, just get up. But then he was getting carted to the side of the park, and I looked across. You ought to seen his knee, the gash. I was like, wow. Don't know, I think Graham had, don't think it was studs he had, I think it was razor blades in the bottom of his boots. But but then he was walking off, obviously got sent off. It was just that aura about him. And it was a statement, I think, although we get beat that day, it was a statement to say, nobody's going to come here and bully Glasgow Rangers. Aye, we're the biggest paid, we've got the best players in the division, but if he's wanting to fight, if he's wanting to stand up and have that type of game with aggression in it, we'll meet that, and we might go even a wee bit further. I thought that was, although we get beaten, this is crazy as it sounds, that was a real statement for Graeme Souness and what his team was going to be about.
So what's the etiquette then for you as a substitute when there's a fracas like that in the pitch and everyone's involved? Did you come on? Do you come off?
Oh, well,
are you worried? You think, I'll stay off, but then does Souness shout at you for not coming on? Or do you understand what I mean?
I sat and enjoyed it. Didn't say that. I was laughing. I was clapping. I was going, this is amazing. Just watching it all unfold. But I knew Stephen Graham would get sent off. I knew that I might go on. Cause of that, so I was kind of getting myself kind of mentally prepared, but no, the one thing that day is you seen that when the gaffer, when Souness get into that kind of situation where all the Hibs players were surrounding them, look at all the Rangers boys, Dave McPherson that day as well, for his Ali Dawson, who again, Ali growing up was my captain at Rangers, again, a lot of respect for Ali Dawson, they were in there, so it was that's what it is. It's that kind of mentality you have as a player. If you see one of your pals, your teammates, in a certain situation, you go in there to back them up. But on the bench, when you can't take to the field, you can certainly sit and enjoy it, which I did. But it was just a real statement, I thought, for Souness, saying, listen, we ain't going to be bullied.
Is a lot of that theatre in the sense that both sets of players know they've got to face up to one another, but not much is going to happen. It's going to be a bit of pushing and shoving. Nobody ever gets...
You're not going to back down. You know, that's... I mean, the game back then, it's totally different now. You could get away with the physical element of the game. You know, you could... And some of the tackles that would be that were going about... I mean, this day and age of just straight reds. But it was allowed then. There was contact allowed. So you could use that physicality to go and win games. I think Hibs tried that day. They got their just rewards, right? But it was just for me, in my mind, in McGraham Souness, that he said, if teams are going to try that, we'll stand up to this and we'll dish out a bit more as well. So, it's part of the game. But I hope it doesn't go out of the game, because I think at times it gets the juices flowing. I think fans still in this day and age, I think they enjoy it. I watched the Real Madrid game the other night, Barcelona. There was a few tasty tackles, and then you hear the roar of the fans. They love it, that commitment. It's nothing better as a fan, and you're watching your team, that they're fully committed, and that is in terms of getting into challenges, running themselves into the ground. Unfortunately, we're not seeing that at times.
Well, thankfully, I mean, that was the last controversial challenge that Souness would make that season.
that season.
So it didn't start off, the season didn't start off the best. Then you played Falkirk. Should I just say McCoy scored every single goal that season, because it's going to save me a lot of time?
Absolutely.
It's near enough. Everything is McCoy'st when I look at goal scorers.
And I don't think Graham fancied Ali in terms of at that time as his main centre forward. I think he looked at Coyste and thought he's got some flaws in his game. I think he should be doing better. But Coist, he had a great... Now, we talk about mentality and we talk about commitment. One thing about Ali McCoist, and people don't... People think he's a... And he's a happy-go-lucky guy. He's a talented boy. Yes, absolutely. But for me, the one thing I loved about Ali McCoist, sometimes I speak about this, is his commitment, how competitive he was, and his mentality. Coist, he missed loads of chances, but did it ever faze him? No. And he would come back for more... And he would, you know, he'd get his goal. The physicality, did Coyce, you know, Coyce's a wee bit bigger than me, but he enjoyed that. He was aggressive, so he was. I think Coyce, as a midfield player, playing with a centre forward like McCoyce, he was a dream to play with. So he was. You're looking at me.
I'm thinking.
Would you think about that as Ali McCoyce? Would you put those, like, you commitment, competitive, aggressive, physicality.
The way I was thinking it is, he's probably told you exactly where he wants you to play the ball. You know exactly how he's going to make his run. So it's.
I failed to mention clever, because he's really clever as well. Because we had free kicks. Coyce is already giving you eye. He knows he's pointing where he wants the ball. He's talking to the big defender, whoever it is. He's putting them off their game, and then boom, he's away. He's got that half a yard. He wasn't the quickest, Coyce. He wasn't slow, but he wasn't the quickest, but he was clever.
Yeah. So. And important goals he's scored as well. That
and he
kind
enjoyed
of
scoring,
factor,
innit? Yeah. You see that in his feet, and that's what the game's all about. But when people ask me about Ali McCoist, and when I use those words, they kind of look at me and go, is that Ali McCoist? Was he like that? I'm going, aye, oh, he was aggressive. Aye, you wouldn't mess with Ali.
Well, the third game of this evening is up at Dundee United as well, and it's a loss 2-3. So it wasn't the best start.
Where was that, Dundee?
Dundee United.
Yeah, I do remember we lost a game.
No, sorry, at Dundee, is that Ibrox? Sorry, 43,000. So it was at Ibrox, lost 3-2 to Dundee United, who were, to be fair, they're a good team. That was the season before they ended up getting to the UEFA Cup final. But then you go on a run. Aki's. 2-1, then you played Celtic at Ibrox for the first Old Firm game of the season, 31st of August. Mr. Durant scoring the only goal of that game. Do you remember that game?
I can't recall that game.
Can you imagine now if it was Celtic versus Rangers and it was Souness making his first appearance? Can you imagine Sky Sports or BT just being all over that? You'd have 2 days worth of build up that.
And again, we're talking about big time players and players doing it in the big games, and that was Ian. Ian was a big game player, so he was again that mentality, that inner belief that you have. You know, Ian had that in abundance, and again, see, back then we lived for the games. We absolutely loved them. You know, and we touched on it earlier about the build-up and everything, because there's no better feeling. Because, again, back then, that was probably one of our problems. Maybe me and Ian at that time, being young men and playing with Rangers and winning an Old Firm game. We enjoyed it.
Well,
a few days.
Let's talk about that. What's your most memorable moment of mischief that you got up to with Ian Durant?
It won't get
any form of prosecution afterwards.
After like a game like that, we would obviously we go out and enjoy the Saturday night, but the celebrations tended to kick into Sunday, maybe morph into a Monday as well, then maybe a Tuesday. It depended. Sometimes we get a few days off, depending on the. But if we weren't in on a Monday, of course, we would enjoy it. But Looking back, you know, and who the thing I'm going to say that we celebrated, but what me and Ian and a few other guys tended to do, we celebrated with the fans. So back then, me and Ian would go to a lot of the Rangers clubs as well, the supporters clubs, the guys that held the Player of the Year dances, a lot of the kind of older players.
I love the idea that it sounds like a Player of the Year dance means that they force the Player of the Year to dance.
Player of the Year dance. An award ceremony. Aye, Player of the Year. Well, there was a bit of dancing there, but we loved that. I enjoyed that. and I'm no embarrassed to say it. It doesn't happen in this day and age. And I think the reason that me and Ian probably, this is why I maybe got myself into a bit of mischief, because I should have been kind of after games, you know, maybe not enjoying myself as much. But I just thought of myself as one of the guys. I was a lucky one. I'm a supporter like anybody else, but I was one of the lucky ones that got to play. So did I enjoy being in their company? Of course I did. And so we used to go around a lot of the kind of supporters clubs, go to their nights out or the player of the year awards, not a dance. But we loved that. We enjoyed that. And I think it was a big part of being a Rangers player. It was instilled into his, going back to Jock, we were talking about Jock. It's important that you don't alienate yourself for the fans. And if we could give a wee bit back to them, and that meant maybe sitting and having a few shandies with the guys, well, if I'm guilty of that, I'll just need to say yes, absolutely.
So the club ended up going on a fantastic run. And once you got hit November, you lost to Aberdeen in November, and then your next loss was in the 4th of April against Celtic, 3-1 at Parkhead.
Well, I'll give you the other extreme. We get beat with Celtic, we never went out. Straight home, doors locked, and that was it. I never went out after a defeat to Celtic. So that was it. And again, it was the same with the Celtic boys, you know, because we would see the Celtic boys as well. We were going for a night out in Glasgow, because we'd all socialise with each other anyway. We'd bump into each other. And it's the same for them, because again, can you imagine? You've just been beat with your biggest rivals and you're out and you're having a few drinks and you're laughing and joking. That ain't going to go down no. too well. So, and that's part of being a football player, that you've got to earn your night out. You get beat with Celtic, whoever. Well, you've no earned your night out, so I'm afraid it's home TV.
But in amongst all that fantastic run of results, there was the 31st of January in the third round of the Cup against you're now one of your now favourite teams, Hamilton Academical.
I wasn't, but I know you. Do you know something? I wasn't at the game that day. I was injured. And I remember, and this is, I thought, and this is terrible to say, but I thought it was going to be a given that we were going to win that game. Is that the Adrian who scored for Aki's?
Adrian Sprott, yep.
Because I was up in Motherwell, in buying myself, I just got myself a new flat, and I'd bought myself, I was up getting a settee. And I said, and I remember coming out, and I thought, I don't need to go to the game anyway, but I'm injured, we're going to be get through the next round, it's a given. And I remember getting into the car, putting on the radio, I think it was BBC Radio Scotland, and then the result came across, we'd just been beaten with Aki's, which was John Lambie was the manager at the time. God, I love John Lambie, played under John for a short period of time. But it must have been a huge moment for Lambie and the Aki's, but it's one that I never seen coming. So it's obviously been done in history, that, hasn't it? But
that's why we love football.
Aye. And I remember some things I don't kind of recall, and then I recall exactly, because I remember getting in, right, ask me, I've got my sweets, going to get delivered, get to the car, go up the road, get a bite to eat, put the radio on, wow, boom, we're out. So.
Went better in the League Cup though. Went better in the League Cup. Stenismuir, East Fife, Dundee United dispatched on the way to play Celtic for 74,000 fans at Hampden.
That's the game that Coop scored the winning goal.
It was indeed, yeah, penalty. Durant got the first for Rangers that day.
That's right, and I remember that because I think it was mentioned them earlier. Big Roy Aitken hauled Terry down. It was a free kick way over on the right hand. I think I put the free kick in. I did. I think I can remember that. And it was Butcher, Aitken, tugging each other, and he hauled Butcher down. And as soon as it was about 3-4 minutes to go before the end, and I remember Coop gets a ball, and I thought, Coop doesn't miss. So I thought, yeah, beauty, that's us. I've got my first medal, and that was amazing feeling. So it was to get my first medal against Celtic in a cup final. Doesn't get any better than that. It was absolutely top.
Well, how many more medals did you get?
I got three league medals, although I didn't, and another league cup. Never got a Scottish Cup medal. That was the one big disappointment under Graham Souness. We had got to the final, and it was the one in the final that Joe Miller scored the goal, 1-0, we get beat. And the reason I remember that, because I had dislocated my shoulder about 4 weeks out for the final, so I was just trying to make the squad or make the bench, and I'd got myself fit. And I remember coming up for Ayrshire, we'd been staying in one of the hotels preparing, and one of the directors come up to the back of the bus and was just wishing everybody all the best for the game. And I remember him just saying, I don't even recall, because there was a number of directors at the time, but he just said to me in a wee pat on the shoulder and says, unlucky, maybe next year, Derek, you'll get your turn. And they walked away, and I thought a few of the boys looked at me, and I thought I'd done enough to at least get a place in the bench. So I went, did I just hear that right? And a few of the boys looked at me, and Ian sitting beside me, and I'm like, ah, I don't know if I'm involved. And I was like, and I kind of, honestly, felt horrible. I was like, can it be? I've misheard that. So we get into the dressing room, and Graham named the team, and I knew I wasn't going to be in the starting 11, but I thought at least I'll get on the bench because I'd done enough over the course of the season, and I was not on the bench, and it was that. I kind of welled up. I was upset. I was angry, and I was angry because the person that took my place on the bench was hadn't been figuring that much at that time, and it was a gaffer. It was Graham. So I had to get out of there quick. I think it was me and Ian McCall were left out. It was me and the Partick manager. So I sat behind that dugout, watched that game unfold. And then I think what really happened was that Graham was pretty confident we were going to win that game. And he was going to take part, get himself on the part. Well, Joe Miller scored 20 minutes to go. And obviously the result, he put himself on. But I always looked at that and I thought, in my mind, I thought I'd done enough to get a place in the bench. But I remember after the game, Graham walking into the dressing room, I'm sitting there, the rest of the players are obviously, everybody's gutted, you've just been beating your biggest rivals. And I remember Graham walking in with the runners-up medal and just chucking it and just saying, I don't do losers' medals. And I remember watching it, that medal, because it was a big bath then, and I looked at it just flying in there because he chucked it into the big where the big bath is in the shower area, and I remember it in there. It was like slow motion, and I looked and I went, that should have been mine. I know it's a runners up medal, and I know Graham said I don't do losers medal, but do you know what, it meant something to me.
Yeah,
I was desperate at that, because it was, again, I was just a young guy. I just was desperate to be involved, to play in a Scottish Cup final. And I just looked at that medal in slow motion. I thought, that's mine. So that was hard to take. I think what happened later on, went back to Ibrox, because everybody goes back, if you win, it's a big party. But obviously everything was subdued. And I remember sitting out in the main stand with me and Ian McCall, because we were gutted. We were disappointed. We're young guys. We just wanted to play. I think it was Walter come out. It was Walter. And just says, listen, you shouldn't have found out like that. We should have now. One of the directors saying to you, we should have said to you beforehand. But that's one thing I never forget. I was absolutely gutted. And it kind of, and it shouldn't, but it just kind of irked me, and it annoyed me with Graham, and I'd get my back up. But that's the way it was. But he was a gaffer. It's his choice, his decision. And you've got to respect that. But as you can tell, it was a sorrying for me.
Well, you got a league winner's medal, though. Mm-hmm. Rangers finishing 69 points ahead, 6 ahead of Celtic. Aberdeen down in 58 and 4th, because that was the season after Fergie had left. So that was the transition, really, from...
Who's the manager at Aberdeen then?
Ian Porterfield. Clyde Bank and Ackies went down that season, with Morton and Dunfermline coming up. And Meadowbank Thistle were promoted. Gosh, right. How long ago that was from their division. Footballer of the Year by the Sports Writers was Brian McClair. Players Player
Brian
of the
scored
year.
That game in the League Cup game. Sure he scored a stunner. Just running about the edge of the box.
Was that the season he scored like close to 40?
Nah, he's a good player. Wasn't a clever player, Brian McClair.
He was a Players Player of the Year as well. Mm. Young Player of the Year, can you remember your teammate that was Young Player of the Year?
Is it Girani?
No, it wasn't. Mr. Fleck.
Robert was it Robert Wright? Yep. There was a powerful young man, Flecky. Flecky, that's what his game was based around. You know, power and pace. A real handful. Yep. So it was Flecky. A great lad as well. You know, and I think, did he go to Norwich? Left did, to go to Norwich.
He's now working, I'm sure he's
classroom
working.
Classroom
assistant. Yeah, that's right.
And again, it's funny, because like Robert's kind of went into that. That kind of, and kind of like the education side, like myself, because it's somewhere even as young men, we probably never thought we would be in schools working with kids, you know, and that's a great thing, you know. I think it's kids with kind of maybe special needs, I'm not sure. I think he's got that, so it's a brilliant thing that Flecky's doing. And again, me, when I'm in the schools, I'm brutally honest as well when I'm with the kids, because I go in there and I tell them about the mistakes that I've made, you know, as a young man and growing up. Because back then, there wasn't any consequences, but in this day and age, with language and songs that are sung, there is consequences. So that's what I'm trying to go in there and use my experiences as a young football player so that these young people don't get themselves into a bit of trouble.
Well, here's a question for you, and it's... it's probably a good way to kind of end the episode, I suppose, because we've transitioned. We went all the way back to the 80s, and at the 80s you were the Rangers player, Derek Ferguson. And then the late 90s into the noughties, were you the Rangers player, Barry Ferguson's brother, Derek?
So which now, I don't mind whatsoever. Now I know
now
what you're going to say.
Lewis Ferguson's dad.
Do you know, I've been in a few, when I'm out and about, sometimes Hamilton, sometimes even in Glasgow. You know, you're going about your own business and somebody will look at you. And my wife, Carol, will probably go, they know who you are. Look, they've looked at you a couple of times. Maybe sometimes it's done in IKEA or something, Brayhead or whatever. And I'll go, all right, it's okay. And then they'll come up and go, are you, you Lewis Ferguson's dad? So it's no, you Terry. Which I think is absolutely brilliant. So I thought, that's class. But hey, listen, he's in the limelight. He's doing well, so I take a wee bit of pride in that, because I think I've had a part to play in Lewis's development. I had a big part to play in Barry's development as well as a young guy. I know that, so I take heart for that. I'm kind of proud of that. That's no something to go, God, that's all I get remembered by, because you know they've got recognised and they've done well in their own right. But I know myself, I played a part in both of their careers.
Well, when I drive with my mum in the passenger seat, my mum's feet start going like she's Phantom working the brakes. When you're sitting watching your son play football, do your feet involuntarily move as you want him to kick the ball?
I see, it's like, I said to you earlier, Ian, it's like I can, when I see him receiving the ball, certain area apart, certain situation, I know what I would want to do with it. I know where that ball's gone. Is it going into Cosgrove's feet? Am I giving it to McGinn? I'm not playing into space for McGinn. I'm giving it him to his feet, because he's no one to run there, you know. So it's player. So I just see passes. To answer your question, yep. But it's but the emotions you go through. We get sent off against Celtic, you know. And I asked him, I says, what happened? And he's really honest. Lewis, and he says, I get excited, Dad. He says, and I get excited, and I was panicking a wee bit because the game was getting away from us, and I thought I could get there. And it's just decision making, you know. And as he gets a wee bit older, plays more games, and he's played a hell of a lot of games, that decision making will get better. But, yep, and even when I see him, like, you know, I mean, some of the goals he scored, I could never dream of scoring some of the goals. The overhead kick against Burnley. the one the other night. That's just something you've got. It's instinctive, you know, and it's like kind of that, just kind of quick thinking. You see it, but to kind of carry it out and put it exactly where you want, that takes a wee bit of skill to do that. So,
well, you won a couple of caps for Scotland, which I'm sure you're very proud of.
Yep, and can I talk, because people go at me, oh, you only got a couple of caps, right? And
there's no such thing as only a couple of caps.
But that's what said to me, that the couple of caps mean a hell of a lot to me. My brother got 46, amazing, should have got 50, I'm not going into those reasons, but even those two caps, and I got them at a young age, they mean the world to me. And I hate that people flippantly go, ah, it's just a couple of caps. It means that I was good enough to play for Scotland. I was one of the better football players in Scotland at that time. So, no.
You get capped when there was Souness, there was Bett, there was Aitken, Bannon, Lister.
Stevie Clark was in the side as well, Willie Miller. Lister,
massive, I'm just talking about centre midfield, a massive amount of talent that was playing for Scotland at that point. It was,
and you know, I probably played some of my best football when I left Rangers, in my opinion, when I went to Hearts. And I never get a sniff at it again. And so it was a real shame, because I got them at a young age, and I'm just saying, it's that wee bit of experience, and certainly at Hearts. I played better stuff at Hearts under Big Joe Jordan.
Well, you were saying that you were proud to get the two caps.
Absolutely.
Just think how proud you're going to be when Lewis gets his first appearance in the dark blue of Scotland, because it's happening. Let's be perfectly honest, it's going to happen. He's head and shoulders above other young players in Scotland in midfield just now.
And he's mature. And I think with Lewis, if you look at him, he can play all these different roles. But the one thing is, he'll not get ahead of himself. He's mature. He's far more mature than I'll ever be. At the age of 19, 20, he's a better man, honestly, than I'll ever be. Just see the way he conducts himself. But again, that's what I'm kind of going to take a wee bit of pride in, that, because that's the way we're trying to bring him up. You know, he respects other people, to conduct himself in the right way, because I think that's a huge part of being a football player in this day and age, how you conduct yourselves away from dealing with the media, all that sort of stuff. But he's a winner, and he knows it's a great lifestyle. He's looked at myself, he's obviously looked at Barry, he looks at other players that is his idols, and he wants that lifestyle for himself. And you only get it if you work at it, if you knuckle down. And I'm a great example in terms of a guy that made a lot of mistakes at young age. So I've said to him, listen, never go to where I went to, because I made them at a young age, and it could have cost me. I could have done better. Yeah, of course I could have, but he'll not make those same mistakes. So he's got a big future, the thing is, I'm able to kind of watch him and be a real kind of pride about it.
Well, on that positive note, I think we'll end this episode of the CSI podcast. Thank you very much to Derek Ferguson for being so candid with us, and it was a very enjoyable conversation. Please follow us on Twitter and Facebook and spread the word around. But thank you very much, Derek.
Absolute pleasure.